Shavua tov. Last week we videoed. I'm not sure if it got me in trouble or it saved me. Yeah. That was my lawyer. Yeah. But I'm here, you know. Let me just, before we begin, let me tell you what I did say and what I didn't say. What I did say is that the overall butcher shop, what I said was the overall butcher shop in Best has a Rabbanut Hashkocha. It could be he sells Satmar meat there. I don't know what that's a different story. But the overall, the underlying Hashkocha is Rabbanut Hashkocha. So that's what you're relying on. There's never been a case in the last 500 years that I know of, and I'm specifically saying 500 years because it's true, 500 years that we've relied on any type of store-paid employee to tell you that something is kosher. We don't rely on it. There's no such thing. You know, I want to tell you something, that the whole idea of, and this really is a segue to what I want to speak about, the whole idea of kosher supervision. You could come closer, Doc. Nothing's going to happen. You could even sit right here next to me and I'll be more comfortable. The whole idea of kosher supervision is a big chiddush in history. It's not something that existed in the time of the Gemara, in the time of Rashi, in the time of the Rambam. Kosher supervision was something that had to be done as things started, mostly started with the Industrial Revolution. And it wasn't a simple, obvious idea, because the obvious idea was you make stuff in your house and it's kosher and that's what you eat, and you made it out of real food, you know, not out of chemicals and not out of any type of things that they. I mean, how many people in their kitchen keep some citric acid or something like that? You don't keep those are things that they use in factories. Probably shouldn't eat them anyway, but that's up to you. but it's those are things that come from the Industrial Revolution. So the Rabbanim at that time scratched their head and said, you know, what do we do about kosher? Everybody, these things, to have a can of beans, you know, baked beans, those were the first canned things, you know, a bottle of ketchup, a can of beans, that was like a big thing, maybe some baked Gerber's baby food, that was a big deal. So they came up with this idea, based obviously in Halacha and Shas and Shulchan Aruch, of Hashkocha, of a mashkiach. That's a chiddush. A mashkiach is a chiddush that I can rely on somebody, but they put all kinds of rules about it. Number one, he has to be knowledgeable. Number two, how often he has to be there depending on what the product is. For meat products, all the time. All the time. Basar shenisalim min ha'ayin is usur. That's a klal. The mashkiach can never be hired by the store that's selling them for obvious reasons. It used to be the mashkiach had a key. He was the only one who had the key to open it up. So some of these rules obviously have to change with the time and with the countries that we live in and the way things are done. No question things have to change, but it's the whole thing is a chiddush, and we have to stick with the chiddush. In Gemara, there's a saying, Ein l'chaboy ela chiddushay. That if something's a chiddush, you can't expand on the chiddush. If something is a new idea, you can't expand on it. We have to stick to that idea for a very good reason. So, you know, as I said last week, you know, there's in this country, I'm from America. America's much more mesudar. It's much more organized than it is here in terms of kashrus. I think there's less politics. There's a lot of politics in America, but somehow or another. You know, the OU did a fantastic job of organizing. I think they're up to something like 350,000 companies. You know, if you can imagine, and not 1,000, 2,000, 350,000. I used to work at the OU, not in the kashrus, it was upstairs, but I used to talk to those guys. I mean, they have, I think, something like 4,000 at the time employees that are out there. None of them get paid, or if they would get caught taking a yogurt from the company, they were fired. There was no such thing as any type of kickback. Not yogurts, not cigars, not hot dogs, nothing. Like, you know, it was they were the integrity was fantastic, and it was very, very organized. I just need to understand the OU. People knocked the OU because they didn't understand what it was. I saw the OU, you know, there's 1,000 computers, and whenever any company under the OU orders a product, just refills, like new oil, new baking soda, whatever it is, it clicks into the OU computer, and it will ring. An alarm will go off if it's the wrong product, if it's not one of the recommended products. Here it's not as organized. I don't think it's as organized. And unfortunately, the better the hashgacha, the less organized it is. it's hard to understand that, but that's the way it is. In other words, you know, the Rabbanut is very organized. But the Rabbanut tells me that here at Beit Shemesh, I'm quoting them correctly, we don't have mashkichim that work on Friday. No mashkichim work on Friday, period. So that means that if you have a takeout shop under the Rabbanut, which is open on Friday, there is no hashgacha on that takeout shop. That's what it means. It's as simple as that.
Not just the
No, but Das has mashkichim to work on Friday. Reuben has mashkichim to work on Friday. The Rabbanut does not. It's a policy that they're closed on Friday because whatever their policy is, it's a government agency, they're closed on Friday. So it's if they have to have a mashkiach at every place, they would have to pay double and triple overtime. It's like being open on election day. You're not allowed. Usher. So, you know, so there's a lot of things you really have to understand with the hashgacha that goes on here. And I think, you know, that people that call with all kinds of very machmir shailas, which I appreciate. I appreciate the Yerush Shemaim, but then somehow or another, like, you know, other things were just completely, it's okay. So, you know, and I want to just say one more thing, and then I'm going to get to what I want to say. I always have a few words before I speak, and then that's the end of the time. That's the way it works. But this is a big, very, I always am, and I'm being very honest now, as I always am. You know, there's a style here, which I was mekabel from my Rebbe, who I believe is the MS. And that is to try to think and try to work out, not automatically say things are usher, not automatically say things that are mutter in any area of Jewish life. It has its wonderful points, but the thing of it is that, and that's what I'm presenting to you. So investigate. It's hard. Investigate. Think about it. Look it up. You know, it's an intelligent thing. Instead of taking the much safer route of, well, it's just usser. I'll give you like a. This gets me right into what I'm saying. I'll give you an example of this. But what I'm saying that if you are listening to me, listen carefully. If you're not, if you just want to go with the badatz, the Eidah Haredah, so do that. I mean, that's a fine thing. But then just do that. But, you know, then you're losing out on a lot of life. And I don't think that's the challenge of halacha. I don't think that's the way halacha works. I think the way halacha is supposed to work is that each thing becomes a shaila, and you're supposed to paskin on that shaila. Lefi ad mokem shiodenu magas. I don't think it's the correct thing, actually, to just say everything is usher. I'll tell you so many things I want to say, so thank you for listening and indulging me. But I'll give you just a couple of examples of this, which you should know about kashrus, especially if you're kind of new to Eretz Yisrael. Rav Reuben Shlita, a tzaddik, a gadol b'Torah, I know him, I met him. I met him. Talmud Chacham Muflag. His hashgacha is considered the best hashgacha in Eretz Yisrael. When you see something with Reuben Hashgacha, it's the best Hashgacha in Eretz Yisrael, better than the Badatzei de Haredes. Why? Because he has a shita that anything which has any kind of question on it, meaning like if there's any machlokas, you go through Shulchan Aruch, the Shach and the Taz, there's a Magen Avraham, there's a Taz, there's all kinds of machlokas. So his derech is that if there's anybody who questions anything, if there's one opinion out of 100 that say it's usher, he doesn't want it in his hashgacha. It's very noble. On the other hand, one can argue, and not only I do, but most Rabbanim argue, that that's not the derech of halacha. That's never been halacha like that, that if there's one shita that says it's aser, we have ways of paskening. There's a derech of psak. So the derech of psak is to go with rov, to go with, there's all kinds of ways to pasken the shiloh, but not the prima godim, not the shach, not the taz, not the shulchan aruch went that way. So on the one hand, from a marketing point of view, it's a fantastic hashgacha, and you really can't go wrong. But on the other hand, you're paying more, and it's, you know, so once you're getting out of that and you're paskening or going with the big poskim, I'm talking about poskim like Rav Vosner, like Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha. Once you're talking about the poskim, they paskened. They didn't just categorize things. They paskened. And this is a very, very important distinction, I think, that intelligent people have to understand, and you are intelligent people. I want to just start with the back here. There is, let me give out the sheet. I printed it. Let me give it to you.
Same idea as
glot. Exactly. Glot, but they look glot in orange sheets, right? Pass these around and you can have these. This should be helpful to you. Okay, no questions yet. Turn it around. You can turn it around. This way. Yeah, the page one is recommended kosher supervision for Pesach. So that's all I have. I'm sorry, I wasn't expecting the huge one. Okay. Actually, here's another one. Thank you. Oh, yeah. The real thing. So let me tell you something very, very quickly, which you know, but let's just review it. In chametz, definition of chametz is one of five grains mentioned in the Chumash, which is exposed to water for 18 minutes. That's the definition of chametz. If it's exposed to water for 10 minutes, it's not chametz. If it's not one of the five grains, it's not chametz. That's the definition of chametz midoraisa midorabanan. There is no other definition of chametz as far as I know. There are chumras, but there is no other definition of chametz. Chametz means one of the five grains, and you have them here. Wheat, spelt, barley, we say oats, which is a machlokas, but that's one of the five, and rye. Obviously, wheat is the most common thing. Wheat is not chametz. Matzah is made out of wheat. Wheat is not chametz, so matzah can be made out of... Matzah actually can be made, kosher matzah, to be yotzah and pesach, can be made any out of these five. If it could become chametz, it could become matzah. If it could become matzah, it could become chametz. If you're creative and you want to make matzah out of something else other than these five grains, you're not yotzah the mitzvah. So the only thing, it's ironic, but that's the way the Torah works, the only thing that's kosher matzah is something which can become chametz. It would be so beautiful if you can make matzah out of something which can't become chametz. Then you can be, you can be so relaxed with your matzah. There would be no such thing as gabrak, so there would be no such thing as a bashkiach. Just make it out of something else. But they can't be. It has to be. Chametz and matzah are closely related. They're the two sides of one coin. One is five grains that was exposed to water for 18 minutes, and matzah, which they work like a bunch of Michiganers, if you've ever been in a matzah factory, to make sure that 18 minutes doesn't go by with and before they clean everything up and make sure that there's no none of these five grains exposed to water. Yeah, you with me? So that's what chametz is. The Ramah, meaning the leader of Ashkenazic Jewry, came along and said there's a lot of confusion in his countries, which was basically Krakow, Poland, Romania, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Galicia, what's now called the Ukraine. Those countries where probably the majority of us come from. So the Ramah quoted others that said, you know what, it's too confusing for people to just limit it to the five. Let's extend the Isser to what's called kitnias. Kitnias means katanchik, you know, kitnias, katan. Small things that when you grind it up, it looks like wheat, or it looks like one of these five grains. And if we say that's okay and this is not okay, so basically, to make it very simple, the Ramah said, anything you can make flour out of, don't eat. That's what he said. If you can make flour, well, we're going to get there. Yeah, you're always ahead of me. But anything, that's what the Rama said at his time. There were no potatoes at the time of the Rama. There were no potatoes. There was no such thing. Nobody ate a potato. Potatoes are recent, a very recent invention. I mean, you can Google it. To imagine somebody would find a potato in their field, would they eat it? Who's going to eat it? Somebody ate it, it was good, and then it became a big industry. The potato founded the state of Idaho. What happens here is the Rama came along, and he was machmir in certain ways on the kidneys. Of course, it goes without saying, the kidneys are not chametz, meaning it, even if you eat it, it's not chametz. It's not even a din, it's not even a chumrah. It's important, but it's a minhag. It has a din of a minhag, and the minhag is the minhag. So what that list was is a subject of controversy. What was the list of kidneys that the Rama, who argued with the Shulchan Aruch and told us what the Ashkenazic Jewry should do, it was a controversy. But one thing is for sure, Ramosha Feinstein points this out, one thing is for sure, if it didn't exist, it wasn't on that list. So if it didn't exist, what's a classic example of something that did not exist? Quinoa didn't exist. Canola oil did not exist. Canola oil, Canadian oil. It was invented. It was industrialized before the war because they needed an oil that had less acid that would work better. So they combined a whole bunch of vegetables, made a new kind of a bria, and hence they made canola oil. Nothing to do with chametz, obviously. Nothing to do with kidneys. So Rav Moshe Feinstein taught us, I've actually heard it from him at Ashir, but it's written all over, you don't have to rely on me for this, that anything that didn't exist cannot be kidneys. Obviously, it cannot be chametz. And this puts us, you see, a number of years ago when I was a yeshiva bocher, so the Badatz Eid Haredes came along and they said that they think that potato starch or potato flour, which are two different things, should also be kidneys because, in fact, it works like flour. It's probably the closest thing to flour. And at that time, Rav Moshe Feinstein himself said, which was our posek, Rav Moshe Feinstein himself said, Mapitob, like you can't go ahead. And the potatoes were not around at the time of the Rabbah, and it doesn't make a difference. Who knows what's going to come out? We can't make up these isurim as we go along. Rav Moshe says peanuts go into that same category, that it was not a quinoa for sure. I don't know where that was popular. Where? China or something? Where did that come from? South Africa? Oh, South America, yeah. Good. South Africa didn't sound right. Okay, so South America, Peseder. Okay, so, you know, this wasn't part of our Polish culture, you know, or Lithuanian culture, or Hasidic culture, quinoa, you know, like who ate quinoa in Varsha. So, therefore, it's not part of the whole Zera of kidneys. Point one about kidneys. Point two about kidneys that we have to know. Again, there are, if you'll look for many of these badatzim, which I have listed for you, and everything that they say is good. You can eat it. It's not an exclusive list, but it's a good list. Eid Haredes, Rav Landau, etc. Rav Landau still has Hashgacha. Still has Hashgacha. Chassam Sofer is good. Harav Machpud is good. These are things that either I've checked out or people that I... Chassam Sofer is not on the list, that's what you're asking. So Chassam Sofer is good. But if every year, Chassam Sofer is divided into two. Right, so every year it's like a different thing, what the, again, the people that I trust say. And this year, what everybody I asked told me that it's good. Chassam Sofer is good for you. Huh? Both. For Pesach. So there are things that are not on this list, and I'm going to talk about them. But these are things that Lekula Alma, you know, everybody will agree that it's good. Again, you don't need me. This is things, because somebody asked me last week or whatever, last time, like, what are the list of the things everybody eats? This is the list of what everybody eats. I was in your honor. The list of what everybody eats. So that's what that is. But I'll tell you a very interesting example. I spoke about this last year, I believe. In order for something to be chametz, As we said, it has to come into contact with water for 18 minutes. If it comes into contact with water at all, we don't ask how many minutes it is. We call it chametz. So, for instance, what's wrong with flour? Can you go to the store and buy flour, whatever the company, Kemach? You know, can you buy Kemach, Pillsbury? Can you buy flour? So the answer is, what's wrong with flour? It's just ground up wheat, and that's what they make matzah out of. The answer is that the flour that you find in the store, al pirov, was washed with water. That's the problem. Hence, it becomes chametz gomer. So a bag of flour, unless you're going to get special flour that was used for the purpose of baking matzahs, is 100% chametz. Possibly, if you eat 30 gram of it, chas v'shalom, chayiv karis. It's a very, very good possibility. That's flour. We can't question, well, did they wash it for 18 minutes or for 12 minutes or for 10 minutes? So what we say is that it's true it's not chametz until it's 18 minutes, but because of the chomer of kares, right, we need to shudder and shake when we talk about kares. So if it came into contact with water, especially in an unsupervised way, so we don't use it on Pesach. Comes the Rav Shulchan Aruch, Balatanya. Everybody relies on this Rav Shulchan Aruch. That if that's true, so you're allowed to take, right? You're allowed to take a piece of wheat, actual wheat. Let's say you go into your garden and you pick some wheat and you chew on it on Pesach. Perfect. Nice. It's a nice thing to do. Wheat, barley, whatever it is. If it's not washed, 100% pure, you picked it out of your garden, it's not in essence chametz. It has to come into contact with water to be chametz. Kidneys, which is, if you turn the page, you have a whole list of what most people say are kidneys: beans, buckwheat, caraway. Basically, it's a list of things that existed, except for corn, things that existed in the time of the Ramah. And corn, so the Gedolim came together and said that corn syrup is usser. I don't know why it bothered them exactly, but most kinds of beans. Just like chametz has to come into contact with water, the five grains, kal v'chomer, you can't say something is usher of kidneys unless it comes in contact with water, yes? Do you understand that? Yeah? I mean, in other words, so if you have peas and it never comes in contact with water, so you have no way to eat it. But in fact, it's not chametz unless it comes in contact with water. So, Oh, so you can't. So that's why rice is considered a kidneyus, right? Rice is kidneyus.
So if you eat kidneyus,
then you can't eat rice. So
if
you eat kidneys, you can eat rice. Because they're not worried about this whole list. Yeah, so you cook them. It's kidney. Most all beans are kidneyus. According to the most post and most green beans, raw, yeah. So, by the thing of it is, kidneys. The thing of it is that today there's a lot of ways to cook things which require no water. Yeah, like so. There's in Israel, have with the Mahadran Hashgacha, you have rice cakes which are kosher l'Ashkenazim. So the hashgacha on it, you can buy them at the store. It comes from Modi'in, and it's called B&D. That's the name of the company. Two Hasidic guys, one's B, one's D. There goes a Bernstein and Davidowitz, I think it is, or something like that. So Bernstein and Davidowitz developed a system of watching. They have hashgacha to watch the rice from the time it's on the pod, to make sure that, in other words, when it's attached to the ground, it can come in contact with water, obviously, that's rain. But once you cut it, the rice doesn't come into contact all the way through the process. And then they air cook it, the rice cakes, and stick it together with its own gluten. And you have a rice cake, which is looks like a rice. I've seen them. I've tasted one. It's a regular rice cake, like all rice cakes. And it's under Mahadran Hashgacha. How could it be rice cakes, Mahadran Hashgacha? So the answer is because it doesn't come into contact with water. It's all based on what the Shulchan Aruch HaRav points out, and that is that kidneys can't be more machmir than chametz itself. Yeah? Kidneys can't be more. Now, that being said, same thing could be true, for instance, with popcorn. Because corn is chitinous, and traditionally, we don't eat corn. Even corn on the cob, you got to cook it, right? You're going to eat it raw. It's a Michael Behemoth if you eat it raw. You don't make a brach on it, even. So you cook it. You cook it, it becomes chitinous. Now, but today, they have corn under Mahadran Hashgacha that never touched water. And let's say you put it into a popcorn maker. No water involved. So there's no water involved. Now, B and D didn't think of this, but I'm telling you, this is a great business opportunity. You can make kosher LePesach popcorn for Ashkenazim, and it's 100%. By the way, that's 100%. Anybody who... Now, there's also... I don't know too much about them because I never actually saw one with my eyes, but you know, people have air fryers. So an air fryer is instead of a deep fryer. So a deep fryer... You put the thing in oil, popcorn. Let's say you put it in oil. But an air fryer does the same thing with air, with hot air, right? So it does the same thing. I don't know. I'm not a cook. I don't know what you make. Tell me three things you make in an air fryer.
So if you took any of it, you cook in oil.
If what?
If you took any of it, you cook in oil, you wouldn't be getting hot air.
That's correct. So I'm getting there. You're right. I'm so happy that you're with me here. So, but who has a air fryer? Anybody? So what are you making there?
Yams, potatoes.
What?
Yams, potatoes.
French fries. Yeah. Okay. Now let's say you take chitinous. And you'd put it into an air fryer. I don't know if you can or you can't. Somebody gave me Shalach Manis air fried. That's the only reason why I'm talking about this. Air fried coconut chips. Coconut chips. I'm not recommending this. You're just playing with his air fryer. I mean, you know, but that's what he made. On a minhag? Some marsayin of a minhag. There's no marsayin on a minhag. Marsayin's only on a deraisa. But I agree with you, eat it in private. But there's no halacha of marsayin. Marsayin, which is the halacha, is only deraisa. So my point is this, that anything which doesn't come in contact with water, or something which is in any way machmitz, real chametz, so then, for chitinous, it's for sure good. Even for real chametz, it would be good. So for chitinous, it would also be good, which is more relevant to us. Now, in an air fryer, you put a drop of olive oil, let's say, on it. Or canola oil, which I just told you was okay. Canola oil is okay, as long as you're sure that the hashgacha is good and it doesn't have other chitinous stuff mixed into it, but canola oil onto itself, if you have pure canola oil, if there's such a thing, then the ones that say la ochle la ashkenazim ha ochlim, this is how it's called in Hebrew, lipatit, right? Am I saying it good? Lipatit. I always thought it was liftis because I'm yeshivish. Lipatit, that's rapeseed oil, canola oil. So there's three categories in hashgacha. One category is ashkenazim. The second category is Sfaradim, Ochlim Kitniyot, La Ochle Kitniyot. And the third category, which is a mystery to everyone, is La Ochle Lashkenazim, Ha Ochlim Lipatit. It's a new, it's not French, it's Hebrew. Canola oil, huh? Liftus. Lamed Yud Pei Tuf Yud Tuf. What? It's rapeseed oil. Canola oil. They use it in chocolate. They use it in chocolate.
They're not the same. Grapeseed oil is not the same.
As rapeseed, not grapeseed. Rapeseed oil. Rapeseed oil is a different thing. Starts with an R. No, not grapeseed. Rapeseed. R-A-P-E. Now, grapeseed is a different story. Don't get mixed up. Grapeseed is a different... No, I'll just tell you something. So you have to put a little bit of oil, let's say, on your... corn, I'm just making up a scenario to illustrate the halacha. You have to put a little bit of oil on your corn, if you have kernels of corn, in order to put it into an air fryer and make popcorn out of it or whatever you're going to make in there. So so you have to have the oil. So now the oil has to be kosher lepesach. So one thing we know is made peiros eino machmitzin. It's a Mishnah that any liquid that comes from a fruit, apple juice, orange juice, any liquid that comes from fruit cannot make chametz. It's a Mishnah. Cannot make chametz. Therefore, olive oil cannot make chametz. Yes, that's what you're referring to. It cannot make chametz, olive oil. Right. So I said this to a Rav who came to visit me on Thursday night. So I said, I was telling him about these rice cakes, which I'm so excited about. Not that I ever eat rice cakes. I don't eat rice cakes. I'm just excited by the idea that there's such a thing as kosher lepesach rice cakes. No. Once it's cooked, it's cooked. Once it's done, it's done. No, there's no gebrox by kidneys, according to everybody. No gebrox by kidneys. That would be mugzam. So even la'ochle, that should be another category. La'ochle, it is. La'ochle shruya, you know. But let me just get this thought out over here. I was saying to a rav of a city, actually, came to visit me about something on Thursday night. I was telling him about these rice cakes. He was excited about the rice cakes, and then I was pushing it to the popcorn. So he says to me, Tioreti atanachon. So Tioreti. Theoretically, I'm right. So I said, why theoretically? I'm right, period. why are you turning me into a theorist? So he said, because you have to put a little bit of oil on it. So I said, but oil is meperos, and meperos ain't a machmitzen. So he says, nah, they put water in the oil. That's what he told me. They put water in the oil. Well, they have machines. Well, if it says 100% olive oil, how do you know? You say it's not true?
In America, when they add stuff to it, and that's why you see there's olive oil over there, it doesn't have a kosher peso.
So here's the thing that I'm telling you this, that olive oil, which is kosher lepesach, and it says on it 100% virgin olive oil, is probably, there's no water in it. And even if there's water, it's probably batel b'shishim. Why would they put water? But there is in Israel, which you know better than I, there's a symbol, a picture of an olive, which goes on a bottle of olive oil. And that tells you that it's 100% no additives olive oil, inspected by the government, for whatever that's worth, but it's inspected by the government, meaning they can close them down. It's considered a health factor. People want, for whatever reason, they want to make sure there's nothing else in there. If, for instance, people are allergic to peanut oil, let's say, so if they put something else in there, but even water, it's 100%. So if you're worried about it, which is good Pesach to be worried, and if it says the OUP on it, there's no water in it, I can tell you. But if it's an Israeli Hechsher, you can look for that olive sign, which it has on, by the way, all the olive oil from Yad Mordechai and all the olive oil from, what's the cheaper brand that people buy? I forget. Taman, exactly. That has that symbol on it. So there's no issue. So you can take, so this is the difference between, I'm just saying, this is the difference between what I was talking about at the beginning. All this I'm telling you just to illustrate my point. That you can take a derech here, which is, they put water in it. Or you can, as you said, do they really put water in it? And this is, of course, a big issue. Why make things usher when they're not usher? It's hard enough to do it. So it's hard enough to keep kosher without this. So you can take kidneys if you are so inclined. And the theory is more, perhaps more important than the din. You can take kidneys. You can put 100% pure olive oil or 100% pure canola oil, which I'm not so sure about the canola oil that's 100% pure, so I don't know about that. And you can put it onto kidneys, and you could cook it that way, and it's kosher lepesach. You'll have a problem, like you say, well, people are going to see me, they're going to shoot me with eating rice cakes on Pesach. Okay. No, but that's, listen, this is true. I mean, people eat kosher bacon. People eat, hamburgers with fake cheese on top of it. They sell it in restaurants. So, you know, like we got over this problem. I'm not saying it's good or it's bad, but there's a lot of things that are, they eat veggie burgers, veggie burgers and put cheese on it. So, like, a lot of people eat stuff that's Maori Italian. And that's much worse, by the way, because that's really, you take a coffee creamer and put it into your coffee after you eat fleishigs. Also Maori Italian. So these are all problems. These are all problems that it says in Shulchan Aruch, but somehow we got over that. So you don't have to start with the rice cakes, which is a midnight. So, yeah.
The idea of
what?
The idea of doesn't it turn into
so you can't be yotze the mitzvah with it. All that means is that you can't. That's the raya that it's good, because matzah shira is 100% kosher lepesach, but you can't be mekayim the mitzvah of matzah with it, because it's not lechem oni. You can eat it. If you find a good hashgacha, you can eat it. OU has a good hashgacha on it, 100% good for Ashkenazim. You can eat it, but the problem, this is the confusion, because people want to, once you start using matzah shir, you're going to use it at the Seder. You're not yotzei the mitzvah with matzah shir. It has to be, your lechem oni is the opposite of usher. That's why it's called matzah shira. It's mezonos. It's meperis. It's the same as any mezonos prayer. If you eat a lot of it and you're kovei asuda, you wash like every other thing. Yeah. Walnuts is not, walnut oil is not one of the kidneys. I don't know about the water in walnut oil. I just know that olive oil doesn't have water in it, especially. That's all I'm saying. I just don't know. I don't know. Yeah. How are you going to eat it? Raw?
Raw.
Yeah.
Can you wash it?
Well, you have to assume it wasn't. You have to assume it was never washed.
Okay, but dry washed.
No. It can't come in contact. Again, the only reason I'm even telling you this is because you're going to wash any of these things, and you're going to check it for bugs, and you're going to wash it off, and you're going to do all these things, is that there are such things that you can eat. There are such things as you can eat. Yes. Hashgacha list, yes. I can't hear. What? There's a very simple answer to that question. It's a very good question. Everyone hear the question? You can find a box of cookies, as you say, that says Eidah Charedus Badatz Lo LePesach, and right next to it says Rav Landau Kosher LePesach, or OUP. Chassam Sofer. It's a very simple thing that the Badatz Eidah Charedus has their kashrus for all year, and if you want to extend it to Pesach, you pay, let's say, I think it's 6% of the your gross the gross manufacturing. So let's say Osem wants to be Badatz Eidah Charedus, so that cost for the week of Pesach costs 10 million shekels, let's say. So the 10 million shekels, so they say, I'm going to go to Chassam Sofer and get it. So what you end up with is Badatz Eidah Charedus, which say we only cover all year, and now you need somebody to cover for you, Taranut. You need somebody to cover for you, and that's how the Chassam Sofer gets into this. But it's not, I mean, if once you understand the business of kashrus, Lonora, you know, it makes perfect sense. How do I feel about it? Everyone should make parnosa. I don't see any problem with it, because they just use the same box. It's the same. It really is kosher lePesach, except that the Badatz Eidah Charedus doesn't want to take responsibility for it. You can't pay them enough, because they require, frankly, 24/7 hashgacha on every product all the way through. That's the Badatz Eidah Charedus. That's what's so beautiful about it. But it's not necessary. So they say, okay, this is lo lePesach, and somebody else comes and says it is lePesach. They checked it, and it is lePesach according to the normative standards that we're in. So it's fine. I didn't list it because it's what I listed are things that are good lekula alma. That's what I listed. In other words, I didn't list Rav Auerbach either. I think Rav Auerbach is the best hashgacha out there. That's my person. I went there. I looked at the plant. I know Rav Auerbach. I think it's a wonderful hashgacha all year round. I think he's just a wonderful person. He's so careful. I tell you a quick thing how I met Rav Auerbach. I was in Tveria, you know, that little shuk that goes down to the water, you know. So there's a vegetable store, fruit and vegetable store, and I saw like the oddest sight. I saw a rabbi like dressed with like this, you know, underneath the boxes of the vegetables, the fruit and vegetables in the vegetable stand, laying on his back and looking with a clipboard like this. Check this. And I said, wow, this rabbi, how do you find a mashkiach like this? He stuck his head out. And I asked him, where did, you know, whose hashgacha is this? So he says to me, Auerbach. Auerbach. So I said, wow, how did Auerbach find you? He says, you don't find me. I am Auerbach. He's Auerbach. I didn't know when I moved to Israel and I heard about, I heard about Auerbach chickens. I didn't understand. I thought it was like a kind of a chicken, like, you know, like, yeah, right. There's different kinds of chickens, you know, like, we shouldn't even say that. We should say Rav Auerbach or Rav Rubin. We should talk properly. Chashev a person. So the thing, I digress, but it's just something I like to talk about. Like, I digress because I'm not talking about Pesach necessarily, but the thing with I spoke about last time is the 12 points that make a chicken mahadran. So one of those points are that you check. There's different places where you have to check to make sure that the animal is healthy. So the Tumas Hagidin, which would be like wherever there's, I don't even know, what's it called in English? No, where all the sinews and veins come together. That's called a tzomet, like an intersection. So the Shulchan Aruch points to two elbows, depending on the animal, obviously, but something like two elbows and two knees. There's a big convergence of gidin over there, veins, sinews, and what happens is that that's fragile, and it easily can become damaged on an animal. Like you ride a horse. I mean, nobody's eating horses, but you ride a horse. It can damage the beast of burden can have a lot of damage to the weight of the animal itself. So the halacha is you have to check the tzomas hagidin to make sure that they're not damaged. That's something that every shochet does on animals. On chickens, you don't have to check the tzomet hagidin. That's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that you don't have to check the tzomet hagidin on the knees of a chicken, you know, walking around. And the reason is because a chicken is not a beast of burden, and a chicken is not so heavy that it can hurt those tzomet hagidin. So the Shulchan Aruch tells us, Shulchan Aruch, Mefurish, that you don't have to check the Tzomas Hagidin on chicken, period. Comes the Mahadran Hechsherim, correctly so, and they say it's not true any longer. Argue with the Shulchan Aruch, and they say it's not true any longer because of all of the hormones that they give chickens. And then why do they do this? Because they want the chickens to be, they want to get more for their money. So they raise the same chicken, but it grows double the size, and you charge by the pound. So these are not, and they don't let them move, and they fatten them up. So they fatten up the chicken. So now the chicken's legs are carrying an unnatural amount of weight. So since they're carrying an unnatural amount of weight, so therefore, you have to check that Tzomas Hagidim, and this disqualified Rav Auerbach chickens because he doesn't believe in checking the Tzomas Hagidin. That's the check mark that he doesn't make. Why doesn't he check the Tzomas Hagidin? Because there's no hormones in Auerbach chickens. So this is where people are not being intelligent here. So once you understand why he doesn't check the Tzomas Hagidin, is because he's going according to the Shulchan Aruch without the... in other words, he also would not eat or give a hechsher on hormones. But he told me he only eats things without hormones. He doesn't eat personally. He just doesn't eat anything without hormones. He doesn't want to give hashgacha to things because he feels they're so unhealthy, to things that have all these hormones injected. Besides for that, once it has hormones in it, the chickens, I know I'm not talking about Pesach, but Pesach eat chicken also. But once it does have hormones in it, besides for the health hazards, that means that they injected it. And if they injected it, right away you have a new shayla, because that needle can puncture all kinds of things in a chicken that can make it into a trefir. So the badatzim, anybody who's called a badatz, are very, very careful, the mashkiach is very, very careful to use very, very short needles and to only put it into certain places, even though it's not as effective. So the companies, the balabatim of the companies, are arguing with the mashkichim about this. But this is what they do, ad kadei kach, that they break the needle in half. That's how it goes. And we're not talking about kupat cholim. We're talking about, you know, shlachtois. So they just simply break the needle in half and they puncture the chicken with a shorter thing. And by doing this and torturing the chicken like this, they're not making it into a trefa. Interesting, here's the chumrah. Here's the interesting chumrah that on a Rav Auerbach chicken that people feel like, you know, he doesn't give any hormones, so there's no needles to begin with. The whole injection process doesn't take place. So you don't have to worry about the tzomus hagidin. It's less of a problem. You don't have to worry about the injections. And there's so many things on the list that all of a sudden you don't have to worry about. So it becomes a chumrah to eat it. That being said, if you eat a badatz, eda charedus chicken, it's also good because they're watching all 12 points. But you see, this is the way it works. And that's my digression about chickens. The meat that you eat, there's no such thing as Rav Auerbach meat. Meat comes, most of the meat that we eat comes from South America. And this you should know, most of the meat in the market comes from, there is some shechita in Eretz Yisrael, very little shechita. It used to be that the badatz, Eda Charedis, had something they called shchutei chutz. They used to write on it, shchutei chutz. They don't use it if it came from outside of Eretz Yisrael. It's too hard to have you don't have a meaningful amount of, now the Meisharim Oilam even, and that Oilam grew so big with kids, Old Beit Shemesh, it grew so big, they can't just rely on Eretz Yisrael cows. Eretz Yisrael cows, not reliable, not enough of them. I mean, imagine, like, you'd have to kill them all in one day. It would be, where are there a lot of cows? There's a lot of cows in South America. What do you mean enormous amount of cows?
They won first prize against the rest of the people, something.
I understand. So there is Chafetz Chaim. That's an example. They don't have so many cows. You're talking about a million Haredim in this country. That's a lot of cows, you know. But so meat comes, generally speaking, meat comes from Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil. That's where meat comes from, and the way it works is that anything that comes from Brazil, I hope my information is a couple months old, but I think it's true. Anything that comes from Brazil is not mahadran, generally speaking. Anything that comes from, usually the ones that come from Argentina and from Uruguay are mahadran, and the reason is very simple: that there's a Rav Lavin in Argentina and somebody else in Uruguay. Uruguay is Bichal, very firm place. And they come in, and the Eretz Yisrael Mashkichim go there. And they have, so interesting, they have cameras in the badatz here. They have cameras on the internet that like this that are in the shlachtois in Argentina, and they're watching it here from Yerushalayim. Besides for sending a mashkiach, they're watching it 24/7. They're watching. Cow moves, ding, the alarm goes off. So Brazil, interesting. I don't want to say anything bad about Brazil. Somebody here from Brazil? Okay, so I could talk about Brazil. The thing with Brazil is that Brazil, for some reason, very hush of people, the hashgach and everything, but they don't let anybody come in. Either you trust us or you don't trust us. That's the deal with Brazil. How does it come out in the supermarket? That everything from Brazil is Rabbanut, everything from Argentina and from Uruguay is Mahadrin of some sort, depending on whose Hashgach it is. So, fascinating. So you could almost, I'm not suggesting you do this, you could almost look at the country, and listen, they sell pig in Argentina also. That doesn't mean just because it came from Argentina, it's kosher. But I'm saying when you see a hashgacha from Argentina, usually it's a mahadrin because this Rav Lavin, who's a Mir Talmud and a chash of a person, the whole Mir, the Mir Mishloach of meat that comes to Mir Yeshiva that everybody's buying, that all comes from this Argentina Rav Lavin. It's 100% good. There's no problem with it. Hormones, I don't know anything about what they do there. with hormones, but it's 100% good. That's how it works. With everything that's everything that's mahadrin in chicken and meat is kosher lePesach. All year. One of the things, but you don't have to worry about this except for Pesach, but all year round. In other words, they're makbid and all of, I'm not talking about anything with prepared. Once it's prepared, you know, like schnitzel that's prepared or something like that, could have breadcrumbs on it. But I'm talking about like if you'll look at the package. On the package itself, it says kosher lePesach. It says, you buy Hanukkah, it says kosher lePesach. It's always kosher lePesach, just like in America. In America, Empire chicken is kosher lePesach all year round. No matter when you buy it, it's kosher lePesach. Yes, it is. They're not eating chametz. It's sheker. With all due respect, there are departments where they have prepared empire. That's a different thing. Kitchens and things like that. The empire shechita is 100% kosher lePesach all year round. There's no such thing as anybody eating anything there. When you go into the empire plant, which I have, you put on a mask and you put on a hat. And I think I thought I'm going to do an operation. Is that like, what are you worrying? I couldn't even chop. Are you worrying about the cow catching a cold? I didn't even understand what they're worried. What about me catching a cold? I didn't understand what I'm doing. But it has to do with kosher, and nobody's eating any sandwiches in there. I'm telling you, there's no such thing in there. You know, these kind of places. I did hear this once, and I know everybody asks me this, so I'm just going to talk like, Bedatz Beis Yosef is a Mahadran Hashgacha. According to law in this country, anything that says Badatz on it, people say, well, there's a lot of Badatz, everybody's a Badatz. But the truth is that if it says Badatz and if it says Mahadran, that has legal ramifications. They're not allowed to write Badatz and any Badatz, and that's why all of these are Badatzes, I think, right? Badatz, 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 Badatz. Mahadran Snuva is not called a Badatz, but I think actually might be called a Badatz if you look at it. Where was I? Remind me? Oh, Beis Yosef. So Beis Yosef is a Badatz, and it's good. And I heard that I might be, don't trust me on this, I don't know. But I heard once that in the Atara factory of chickens, even though it's Badatz Beis Yosef, and by the way, people say that's for Sfardim, Ashkenazim. Sfardim are more machmir in Shechita than the Ashkenazim, not less machmir. Shechitas Beis Yosef, meaning Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, Shulchan Aruch, he was more machmir. When I learned to brisk, they would only eat Beis Yosef, not Beis Yosef or Vadi Yosef. Beis Yosef to Beis Yosef. The Sfardi Shechita is very, very machmir. It's a sharper knife, and they're checking more things. Sfardi Shechita is not a problem. The problem with Atara is that it was one of the first companies here in Israel after Of Yerushalayim, and that's working so fast. I mean, it's working something like 60 chickens a minute, boom, 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 boom. And they set down certain standards of kashrus, mahadran kashrus, but they themselves said that it's a very, very difficult challenge to keep up with the mahadran standards on the mass production. Now, the truth is, you go into a supermarket and you see very chashuva looking Sfardim buying Atara chickens. I'm sure it's good, or they don't know. I don't know, but I'm sure it's good. I just tell you what I heard, and once I hear something, so I'm biased. This is the power of Lashon Hara. I heard that on the Atara chickens, it needs bedika. And for years I've been trying to actually get a way to get into the factory and see with my own eyes, because I feel when I see with my own eyes, it's a completely different look. Okay, we have 5 more minutes. Let me take a question. 2 questions, yeah. Beis Yosef, the Beis Yosef from 1400s.
Yeah.
You want to understand Hilchos Shechita according to the basic number of things. But according to, in Hilchos Shechita, again, let me make it 100% clear. I'm sure it's clear to everybody because they've confused everything. There's Beis Yosef. He's the man who wrote the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Yosef Karo wrote the Beis Yosef, and he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. There's a Hechsher called Beit Yosef, which has nothing to do with that. That has to do with Rav Avadya Yosef. Beit Yosef. Nothing to do with the Beis Yosef. They never met. Two different things. So I'm not talking. You're not talking about Beit Yosef Hechsher. I don't know why they named it that. Beis Yosef Shchita, which is Sfardi Shchita. So there's a number of things which are different. One of them is it's a double-edged knife, which is sharper. What we call glatt, by them, everything is glatt, meaning that, the definition of a sircha, which is some type of a blemish on the lung. If you look at what the Beis Yosef says is a blemish on the lung, in the Ashkenazi world, that would not be considered a blemish. Now, I'm not saying to Chumr to only eat Sfardi Shchita, but I'm just saying that people that say, well, that's for Sfardim, we don't know if it's good for Ashkenazim, that's Shtuyot. That's complete Shtuyot. You also have Chabad Shchita. Chabad Shchita is also another Chumrah over our Shchita. So it's good. Chumras are good. But it's not a normative kashrus. But the issue with on Pesach, let's refocus here. Do you notice I'm getting like a little bit like ADD? I'm a little bit worried about it. I'm like all over the place. But I talk about a lot of things at once. The thing is like this. Let me just sum up till we walk out of here with clarity. When you see a hashgacha, it could be a wonderful hashgacha, Beit Yosef on Pesach, Sfardi hashgacha, Mahadrin. But if it's a Sfardi hashgacha, then it will say on it, La'ochle kitnius, because they eat kitnius. So that's not a good hashgacha for us if we're being Noah Ashkenazim, period. Let's say we're not so machmir on some of the things that they're worried about Ashkenazim about. So, okay, like in other words, peanuts. Well, I'm not worried about peanuts in my life. I don't like them, but I'm not worried about them. You know? So let's say the Sephardi Rava Machshir says, Ashkenazim don't eat peanuts, or peanut oil even. So I'm going to write Lochle Kitniot Bilvad. So you could say, but okay, I eat peanut oil, but that doesn't mean anything, because since it's Lochle Kitniot Bilvad, they allow themselves to put other things in there, and they're not so machmer on it. So something which says, Lochle Kitniot Bilvad, you shouldn't eat it. You shouldn't eat it. If they say that the second level is that it's mutter for Ashkenazim if you use canola oil, that seems to be their big thing, the big borderline. In my opinion, you can use canola oil, and it can actually be a lot less expensive than some of the oils that are on the market that people are machmer to buy. You can use canola oil, assuming it has a good hechsher, and if you can find one that says Ashkenazim, this would be the best thing. There are two or three brands. I'm sorry, I don't know them. And then you have these badatzim and mahadrim, which have halachic significance, and you can eat them. We spoke about Rav Auerbach. You can eat them. At the beginning, I spoke about best for a minute. I don't want to speak about best too much, but somebody said something. I hope it wasn't one of you, but one of the it was your fault, was it? But somebody said some. First of all, I never said anything about fruits and vegetables. Nachon, I never said a word about fruit. Okay, no, I wasn't accusing you of anything. But I just want to say that, but somebody responded and said that there's no such thing as a mashgiach of fruits and vegetables in any place, even in the Mahadran places. This is ridiculous. Of course there is. Of course there is. If there's fruits and vegetables at a store under Rav Rubin or under the Badatz Eid HaRedis, the mashgiach is there all the time. He's not there 24/7. He's there all the time, like Rav Auerbach, sitting under the boxes and looking at the. If you go to the wholesale market, which is outside of Har Nof, Givat Shol, over there, you'll see in the Badatz Eid HaRedis fruits and vegetable stores, there's four or five mashkichim standing there all the time. So of course there's different hashkachas, and in Yesh there's hashkacha. You don't necessarily see them just because you see a guy who looks like a frum guy looking at the cucumbers, and you don't know that he's the mashkiach. Not that he's hiding, but you don't know that he's the mashkiach. It's not like you're going into a Waldbaum's or something like that. It's a, he's a mashkiach. So when it comes to you have to look. Let me just end with this thing. You have to look at the hashgacha. Read your labels. Be intelligent consumers. Look at the hashgacha. You should know that in the health food store, and I found this myself, in the health food store, so they innocently take things out of big packages and they repackage it into small things. Now, I don't know. I mean, they're not frum. Don't know if they're makbid, you know, not to eat near it or not to, or if it is exactly what it is or to use fresh things. So you don't use that. But they'll tell you, look, it came from a badatz. But there's, you know, we have standards here. So we're not eating things that are repackaged. It doesn't have a mashgiach standing there. The labels that you see should be originali. They have to be real labels, original labels, and it has to have the stempel of the badatz on it. So all of, and everybody does it. This is a problem in this country. They're repackaging. They buy in bulk and they repackage. So don't. Fruits and vegetables are you're buying. It says on the hashgacha, right? Frozen, by the way, frozen vegetables. So is kidneys. Why is it kidneys? Because they wash it off with a wash thing, which is kidney citric acid, other types of kidneys. Not all, unless you see hashgacha for Pesach, for Ashkenazim. So Bodik has, let's say, there are different ones that are kosher le Pesach. Or get completely unwashed, if you're really brave, get completely unwashed, fresh, and check it. You can do that too. But I don't want to get started with that. So I wish everybody, yeah. I didn't say all the time, no. I said that if a place like Yesh Mahadrin, if they have a, I think it's Rav Reuben, so it says that's a different Rav Reuben, but they say that it's kosher under the Hashgacha Rav Trubus Abaisers, he sends his Mashgichim in there and they are watching it. If it's under the Rabbanut, they don't do that. And you shouldn't eat fruits and vegetables that are under the Rabbanut. Why? Because they don't take Truman Meister the same way we do. They just don't do it. It's a kol hakavod to them, but they don't do it. And the reason they don't do it is this goes back to the beginning of the state where they couldn't bear to throw away 100 cucumbers. Understandably, people were poor and people were starving, so they made all kinds of kunsim to put it back, like Shemitah. So it's not that they're bad people, but I'm just the Mahadran fruits and vegetables are Mahadran fruits and vegetables. So you can't, there's no wiggle space on that. You have to have a Mahadran Hechsher. But I'm just telling you that if there is a Mahadran Hechsher there, there is a Mashkiach that goes in. If it doesn't say Mahadran Hechsher there, which I don't know, for instance, in Best, if there is or if there isn't. It says Efrati what? Does it say that the fruit and vegetables under the Efrati, or it says that they have a shipping slip from Efrati? Well, that's the difference. You see, that's why you have to read it, because on their takeout store, it also says Rav Machpud, and all it is just an invoice which says that they received a shipment from Machpud, which I'm sure they did. It does not say it's under the Hashgacha of Rav Machpud. And oh, could be. I don't know. Tell you the truth. No, I said this last week. I've never been in Best in my life. I don't. Baruch Hashem. If it says it's under Rav Efrati, it's under Rav Efrati, and it's good. If it is, it is. And what is what's true is true. But the butcher shop, nachon, that the butcher shop doesn't say Rav Efrati, right? The butcher shop doesn't say Efrati. What does it say? Rabbanut. Says Rabbanut. I say it. I have a picture of it. So it's Rabbanut. I'm not. I'm just saying it's Rabbanut. That's a fact. No, because he called me this week and he said, "Did you say my store is Treif?" Thanks to everybody here. So I said your store is Rabbanut. So is it something more than Rabbanut? So he said to me, "What do you mean?" Okay, that's what I mean. It's Rabbanut. I'm not, like if you find me in the back of a trunk or something, you understand. But Drori is a wonderful Jew. Rav Drori is a wonderful Jew. But it doesn't say, I don't believe that it says that this chicken, that somebody is watching, that the chicken in the butcher shop came from Rav Drori. You know the famous, no, I don't think it says that. What it says is that they received a shipment from Rav Drori. You know, like I'll end with the famous story about somebody who went into a falafel shop. And he said, "Is this kosher?" is a kosher. So he shows them. He says, you see what I have, the pictures? You know, I have Rav Abuchatzira here. I have the Ben Ishchai here. I have the Chafetz Chaim here. Who do I have here? What do you mean is a kosher? So the person said, if he would be standing there and your picture would be up there, I'd be happy to eat it. But a picture, like... So this is what it is. It's a picture. All it is a picture that there was a delivery order. And I'm not, by the way, let me make myself clear. I'm not saying anybody's trying to cheat you. Or I'm not saying anybody's underhanded. Chas v'shalom. I mean, I'm the last person to say this, and they seem like very nice people. I'm just saying that the din is that we eat things with hashgacha. And for people on our madrega, I get calls about somebody who didn't check one bean and then fell into their cholent. What should I do? Like for people that are so such yirei shemayim baruch Hashem, so don't. What are we eating rabbanut? It's not the correct thing to do. Don't eat rabbanut. There's a din of hashgacha. It's not a matter of you know the guy, you like the guy, this is the guy. This is not the issue. It's rabbanut. That's the underlying hashgacha. Very nice. Chag kosher v'sameach.